Welcome to the number one podcast covering Michigan State basketball. The Final Four is not in the schedule. Join Rod and me, Eric, as we dive deep into the Spartans to get you prepared for every game. Subscribe today for in-depth recruiting updates and fantastic interviews with today's important college basketball personalities like Robbie Hummel.
Thanks for having me. I have listened to your guys' podcast numerous times on drives throughout any Midwestern Big Ten city, so I am big fans of your guys' work.
Jay Billis.
And next time, hey, if anybody in Michigan wants a December tea time, call me. You wimps won't show up, but I'll be there. I'll be there and play in the cold. And Izzo will be in front of the fire with hot chocolate.
Coaches Thomas Kelly.
No problem. Glad to be back, man. Glad to be back.
Mike Garland.
Just can't sit there and trade twos for threes. You can't do it. You're going to lose. Coming down the stretch, you're going to lose.
And more. You won't find better coverage of Spartan hoops than you will get here. For both the casual and hardcore fan, come along as we take you for a green and white ride. Hey everybody, it's Eric alongside Rod here to discuss the last game of the regular season for Michigan State on the road at Indiana. If you appreciate what we do and want to thank us with a one-time gift or recurring gift, head on over to tffinots.com/support to get the necessary links. We're still looking for another sponsor of the show, so if you're interested, you can reach out to me at eric@tffinots.com. Okay, so Michigan State is coming off a four-point win to close the home schedule against Northwestern and looks to take that show, minus the horrendous shooting, out into the road to try and spoil Indiana's senior night. Of late, Michigan State has won four of the last five against the Hoosiers, but only one of those was in Bloomington. Last year they split. Indiana won the last matchup at home last year. They are 17-13 for the season, 9-10 in the Big Ten. They're rated 93rd in KenPom and 95th in the net. They're on a three-game winning streak, including a double-digit win Minnesota on Wednesday night. They're 93rd in offense, 91st in defense, so pretty equally balanced in being kind of mediocre. They do two things really well in offense. They shoot twos really well at 44th, and they draw a lot of fouls at 30th. Unfortunately for them, they only shoot 66% from the line. They don't value the ball very well. They turn the ball over a ton. They're 195th in turnover percentage, and they don't shoot very well from outside. They're only 32.8%, which puts them at 229th in the country. Also, despite being really big team, they don't offensive rebound very well. They're 258th. On defense, well, not much different, right? It's just they're good against twos at 81st because they get some blocks at 70. They're ranked 71st in block percentage, but they don't guard at the three very well. Teams shoot really well against threes. They also don't generate any turnovers. They're 310th in generating turnovers. They don't rebound defensively very well. They're 217th. And unlike Wisconsin, they are unlucky with teams shooting at free throws line, where teams are shooting 74% against them. They do also foul quite a bit too, so they're 151st in fouls, free throw attempts allowed. They do play pretty fast at 120th for tempo and 108th in average length of defensive possession, which is a little different than the last couple teams that Michigan State's played. So they are, I'd say, probably about what we thought they're going to be before the season started.
Yeah, give or take. I mean, I think that the development of their bigs has been important, and you know, it all gets reflected in the fact that this is a pretty good team in the paint. Yeah. If you're talking about inside the arc, both ends, they're pretty good. The problem is when you get outside of that. And I should amend, pretty good in terms of making shots and preventing opponents from making their shots. Where they struggle is rebounding the ball at both ends. I mean, they're sub 200. It's just, yeah, for a team with this much size, it's kind of hard to understand. But it is essentially, you got Kalel Ware, Malik Grinnell, and then nobody else grabbing a rebound. That's it. So if you want a better example, I think this team is actually a really good example of something we talk about a lot here, which is your rebounding is generally as good as your guards make it. Indiana's a prime example of that because their starting center is just shy of double digits rebounding per game. Their starting power forward grabs 6 rebounds a game. Those are very good numbers from those two positions, but they get nothing else. And when you get nothing else, it's hard to rebound well. So, prime example of that. Turnovers, they commit a fair amount of them. not surprising for a team that's really, really short with guard play. Although you can argue they're in the best spot they've been in months because Xavier Johnson is back, which gives them one more playable option. I'm not the world's biggest Xavier Johnson fan, but he's at least playable. And they just didn't have enough guys that were even playable at that position. Now, you know, to be fair to them, they've won three in a row. So, okay, what does that mean? Well, they beat Wisconsin, who has been just absolutely crashing to earth of late. You know, Wisconsin's in a battle to actually finish above 500 in the league now, if you can believe that. As we're recording this, they're in a tight game at home against Rutgers. If they were to lose that game somehow, I think they're going to finish 500 because they've got Purdue in the season closer. They're not winning that.
No.
So, you know, how much does the win over Wisconsin mean? I don't know. It's debatable. They won on the road against Maryland, who has been in free fall for about a month. I don't know how much that means at this stage. And then they went into Minnesota and they beat a Minnesota team that I think has been playing very well. They didn't play well yesterday. Yeah. Now, you know, give Indiana some credit for that. But I guess my point is I've seen a take around the last day or so that somehow Indiana has solved all their problems. No, they haven't. They got a three-game win streak against, you know, they didn't beat Illinois, they didn't beat Purdue, they didn't beat Nebraska or Northwestern in any of those games. You know, that's your top four. So what does it really mean? I think it means that they played pretty well for three games. Well, you can say that about almost everybody in the Big Ten at some point.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they can't do it for a fourth game in a row. Don't get me wrong. But this idea that somehow all of a sudden Indiana's figured it out, they're a really tough customer now. Come on. We've seen what they are. You know, they could have for 40 minutes, those guards could shoot the lights out.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff happens. I'm not saying it's a guarantee that they don't play well. I was on Jack Ebling's show earlier today, and we were talking about this, and I said, look, Michigan State's a better team. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it. They are, particularly in the backcourt. Does that mean they're going to be better on Sunday? Hey, your guess is as good as mine, because we've talked about that all year.
Yeah.
But Indiana's not a very good team. Let's just not, we can't confuse that. They're not.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, when it comes to Indiana, at least they've shored up their coaching. It sounds like Woodson's coming back next year. So they have solved that problem.
Yeah. Well, have they? Or have they kicked the can on something that's an inevitability? I found that very interesting because the assumption is that Dusty May, the Florida Atlantic coach, took them to the Final Four last year. Is an Indiana alum, was a manager under Bob Knight. The assumption is that Dusty May is going to move after this season to the high major ranks. And I can't see why he wouldn't. He'd be taking a tremendous risk to his chances in ever getting a high major job if he doesn't go now.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I mean, look, even with as many guys back as they had, they pretty much everybody back, I think, from that team. They have not been dynamite this season. You know, they're probably going to get in the field, but last I looked, it wasn't considered a lock. You know, they've had a little bit more of a struggle than they had a year ago. So that goes to show you when you're at that kind of job, hey, there are no guarantees that you're ever going to be in a position, you know, where you can strike and take a high major job. So why is that important? Well, the assumption has been for much of this year, at least, that, hey, Dusty May is the guy.
Yeah.
And you get Woodson out of there and you bring in Dusty May and we go forward. You know, the latest savior of Indiana basketball. They've had a few in the last several years, last couple of decades. But that's not going to happen now because Mike Woodson is getting another year. And so it creates an interesting situation for Dusty May. Where does he go? You know, Ohio State might be a possibility. I'm sure there are going to be some other high major jobs that open that are tempting, and we'll see how that all works out. But it's not going to be in Indiana. And so Indiana takes a risk there, too, that if they truly believed that he was a guy that could do the job for them, Well, they probably are going to miss out on that because I think it's a virtual certainty he'll have another high major job.
Yeah.
So it really, you are really doubling down on the idea that you think Mike Woodson can get it fixed. Well, what does this look like? You're losing Xavier Johnson. I guess I don't know for sure about some of their other players. I think Khalil Ware probably is a near certainty to go because he's getting mocked in first round now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had a great, I mean, there's no question he's had a, you know, when I talk about them not being a great team, individually, he's had a really good year and he's playing extremely well right now. So you're probably going to be short of him. I don't know what Renault will do. I mean, it's just going to be, that lineup next year is going to be interesting, and he's got to fix the backcourt. He has to. So I know he's got a highly rated kid, one at least, and Liam McNeely coming in from Mount Verde. But I don't know. I don't feel right now, after, you know, not knowing what they're going to do in the portal, I just don't feel that this is a team that looks like a really, really good bet to be markedly improved. So, and Mike Woodson has just not shown an ability. You know, this is the third year. He made the NCAA tournament his first 2 years, but let's be honest, those weren't great seasons.
No.
They were okay. And now he's missing it in his third year. Has he given anybody any reason to believe that a turnaround is coming? I would say this, from a Michigan State standpoint, not just Michigan State, but also Purdue, for example, other Big Ten schools that are recruiting the state of Indiana, I'm probably happy about this.
He leaves it open.
Because,
yeah.
Well, because, you know, with some of the kids that are out there as highly recruited players from that state, and there are a few from that state in the 25 class and the 26 class, you know, if the situation seems unstable there, and I think despite this announcement that he's back, I think it's going to be seen that way. And you're a rising senior, let's say, this spring. Do you want to commit there? I don't know. Maybe he convinces you that you're the key to turning it around. But that seems like a dicey proposition to me. And I could be wrong about how that turns out, but I don't know that that's good. And then, you know, thus far, you know, Khalil Ware proved to be a good addition in the transfer portal, but I don't think Woodson's demonstrated that he's a guy who's really got that nailed at this point. I don't know that anybody does.
No.
I think it's a roll of the dice every year. But it'll be interesting to see how we're looking at this a year from now. If we say, boy, and look, here, the other thing I do have to say in fairness, Indiana is still, despite the 20 years of mediocrity, it's still a great job.
Sure.
I mean, you are at a basketball-first school. You have all the resources you could ever ask for. You have a fan base that is large and enthusiastic. So when times are good, you can really ramp things up. You know, basketball matters in Bloomington, bottom line. In a way, it doesn't anywhere but a handful of places. And I could argue that when it's going good, it might matter there more than anywhere else. Places like Kentucky and Kansas and Carolina, it matters a great deal. But those states don't match the state of Indiana in terms of their intensity around the sport. They just can't.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't match Indiana in terms of in-state talent production either. So when you get it rolling, if you get it rolling, it can be a platform job to achieve at the highest levels of the sport.
Yeah.
So I say that to say, kicking the can a year down the road, they're still going to have good options a year from now.
Right. Yeah. They'll still be a desirable job. Yes.
Yeah. It's just that the Dusty May thing kind of seemed like their latest version of, well, here's the savior. Here's the guy who would want this job and has a track record that would get everybody excited, get the fan base excited, at least for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And you know, that probably is not going to be on the table now. So it's going to have to be somebody else, but there will be lots of other people. It doesn't mean that the Indiana program is doomed to more mediocrity if they fire Woodson a year from now. I don't know. It seemed curious to me because credit to them, I guess, for showing patience, but to me, there hasn't been a hint of big time enthusiasm since Woodson took over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been that way for a while. I mean, they had a brief honeymoon when Archie Miller got the job. That didn't last long. And so you really got, when's the last time people felt really enthused about Indiana basketball? I would argue you're going back to, you know, mid-period Tom Crean.
Yeah.
That's a long time. That's a long time for that school, that program. It's just, and the longer it goes, you know, the more, I'm not saying that Indiana and at any point in the near future becomes a job that lacks the potential to be big time, but I think it just gets harder the longer you go with this year in, year out kind of, you know, that's the thing. They're never, you know, truly awful. They just haven't been very good either,
right,
for a long time.
Well, so, you know, if you think about it, 20 years, that's a generation. And just like we see, like there are plenty of Michigan State fans who are of, you know, 30 or under.
25, closer to 25.
Well, yeah, but
closer to 25.
Right, yeah. But I mean, you know, what I'm saying is like a whole generation has really not known Indiana basketball to be very, you know, great.
Correct.
Just like a generation of Michigan State fans have known Michigan State to be, you know, a blue blood, so to speak. But, you know, if you're older than that, you've seen this other things.
This is something that gets, you know, and it comes up again today when, you know, inevitably on social media, this stuff starts. And I got asked about it on Jack Ebling's show today. I was shocked. He asked me if I thought Chris Collins would be a possible successor to Tom Izzo. And
it's,
I,
a weird,
said,
question.
No. Why? Just Jack's no dummy, and Jack's been around the program, and he knows Izzo extremely, you know, as well as any media member does. But I just, bringing a background to Indiana without going too deep into the weeds on the substance of that particular question, the point is, Indiana is one example, but there are lots of others too. If you look back over the history of the sport, if you think that even 25 years of serious success means that you are immune from becoming, you know, mediocre, only occasionally relevant in the sport for a long period of time, I got lots of examples where exactly that has happened. And Indiana is the one that's closest to home. It's a real generation gap that's reflected in how Indiana is thought about. You're exactly right. Because if you ask people our age, what we remember is, you know, close to 30 years. I'd say about 25, and the last 5 years or so was a little bit of a tail off, although they were still not terrible. But 25 years where Bob Knight had Indiana basketball as arguably the best program in America over that period. In a 25-year, well, Christ, it's shorter than that. They won three national titles in, what, like a 16, 17-year period.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, and they were still considered contenders and got to at least one Final Four after, in the next, let's say, 7 or 8 years after their last title in 87. That program was synonymous with big-time basketball. It was clear-cut the standard bearer in the Big Ten. Not a doubt about it. Same way that Michigan State has clear cut been the standard bearer in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
It's very similar time frames, very similar status. Indiana won more national titles. Michigan State went to way more Final Fours. But it's a similar thing. And yet you've seen what's happened. And you've seen it. What's even more stark about it is you've seen it happen in a place that cares so deeply about the sport. Michigan State is a big time college basketball program right now. That's how it's viewed. But you are living in a dream world if you don't think that there's a legitimate question post Izzo. Are they an elite? Is Michigan State an elite program, or did they have an elite coach for 30 years? We don't know the answer to that. You and I have lived in a time before Tom Izzo, so we've seen when Michigan State was a good to very good program, but not an elite one.
Yeah.
We've lived that. So there's, and to see it happen at a place like Indiana that deeply cares about it, demands it, all of that, and yet it still happened, it goes to show you it is not preordained. You can screw it up easily if you are not careful. And, you know, that's just something that is always, as a Michigan State fan, and as we know, no matter what happens, we are getting toward the end of Tom Izzo's tenure, whether it's a year from now, 5 years from now, we don't know. But sometime in the relatively near term, I would say it's safe to assume within the next decade that happens.
I think so. Yeah, 10 years for sure, yeah.
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard to envision that slipping back, but I know that it's possible because I've seen it. I've seen it happen, and I raised Indiana to say I've seen it happen in a way that was at least as unthinkable to people in the year 2000 as it is for people sitting here in 2024 to think about it happening to Michigan State. At least.
Yeah, I think there's no question Indiana's fan base, when Knight was fired, were not concerned about the state of the basketball program. They had gotten so used to being where they were, and there was just an assumption that whoever they picked, they would still be successful. And obviously it didn't work out that way. And so I think, you know, they've probably been more hesitation in getting rid of Knight for his, you know, Knightness at Indiana.
I don't know. It's an interesting question, you know, because Knight, when that all happened, Knight had been in a down period.
Yeah, they weren't as good.
He was going through a lot. But more than just not as good. They were losing a lot of guys to transfer. I mean, there was the whole deal with Neil Reed, which ended up being the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, video footage of him throttling Neil Reed. But they had a lot of guys. Luke Recker, who was a really high-profile player, transferred to Iowa in an era where guys did not typically transfer to schools within the conference, you know, and they had to sit out. So you really had to want out. You know, he was losing guys like that, and he was getting highly rated classes that were not producing anymore on the court. So there were questions about where things were at with Bob Knight and his program anyway. But, you know, it's interesting. So they fire him. Mike Davis steps in, and what was it? It was year two or year three. I can't remember which now. He gets to a national championship game. So if you're an Indiana fan, you think, okay, see? It works. We are. It's the program. It's not the coach. Well, then Mike Davis's period starts to tail off a little bit. Then you hire Kelvin Sampson. Well, we all know Kelvin Sampson is a fantastic. He's one of the best basketball coaches of his era. He's proven that. He had big winners at Oklahoma. He won some at Indiana before things caught up to him. And he's obviously done an amazing job since taking over at Houston. Yeah. And Indiana had him. Great coach. Well, that didn't work out because he got in trouble with the NCAA. So then you bring in Tom Crane, you know, and looked like Tom Crane was finding it. About 2013, you know, he had a team that everybody thought was a legitimate title contender. They get bounced by Syracuse in the Sweet 16. Sound familiar? same deal, by the way. Michigan State is not the only school that's fallen victim to a bad shooting night against that Syracuse zone in a tournament game. But they got bounced in the Sweet 16. He never really got anywhere close to the level of that team again. Then they hired Archie Miller, who was as hot a name as there was. Archie Miller never gets it done, never comes close to getting it turned around. So, you know, and now we're on to Mike Woodson. It goes to show you that even if you can attract, I mean, if you look at those hirings, Mike Davis was just an interim guy who became the head coach. So that one doesn't count. But if you look at Kelvin Sampson, Tom Crane, and Archie Miller, all three of those hirings, those were guys who were considered to be among the best hires of those cycles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those were guys who were all high-profile coaches in definitely in Tom Crane's case, and I can't remember for sure whether Kelvin Sampson had done it before, but at least one, maybe two of those three guys had been to Final Fours before they'd been at Indiana. So we are talking about very accomplished coaches, and yet none of them were able to truly get it done. That's why it's not accurate to call Indiana basketball over the last quarter century a complete failure. They've had these spikes of relevancy. The trouble is they've never been able to sustain it. They'll have a year where they're really good and they're considered a national contender, and then they go away for 5-6 years where it's, you know, barely scraping into the tournament or not at all. You know, never truly horrible, but never great. And that's my concern, is you can even be in a position where you're able to attract what is considered to be top-tier coaching and still not have it work out.
Yep, unless you have a crystal ball, you can never know. And so that's why, unless you're 100% sure, you just got to stick with what's working for you. So anyway, but let's move on and talk about the game here before we get too sidetracked. But we'll start with the lineups for Indiana, brought to you by the brothers Just Two Gutters. It is Michigan. There's lots of rain. And maybe your business or your home needs gutter work done. Or maybe you're having some problems. Your downspouts, they're full of leaves, some sort of trouble like that. The brothers Just Two Gutters can take care of that. They took care of a really long section of gutter that my wife's office needs. Just one section. It was not a big job, but it was a job that no one else is willing to do because they're busy or whatever. She called the brothers Just Two Gutters. They came out and did it, I don't know, within a week or something. They took care of it and did this really long section of gutter, did fantastic work. So anyway, they can do whatever job, whether it's small or big. They'll take care of it and they'll do a great job, and the nice professional people too. So, and you know, just like one of our listeners before said, you just kind of wave someone down, just say hi, and they end up fixing a little bit of his gutters. So check out the brothers Just Two Gutters, and you can find all the contact information at the support page at the finalfoursontheschedule.com/support. Either if you're on the west side of the state or the east side of the state, you can find and get an estimate there. Mention Final Four to get 10% off your estimate. They sponsor the player that Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter, and after we get through the lineup, Rod will tell us who Michigan State needs to keep in the gutter this game. We'll begin with Trey Galloway, 6'5 senior. Has had him playing point guard for the team most of the season just because of injuries. He's not a natural point guard. He's averaging 10.8 points a game on 46, 25, and 53 shooting. 5 assists a game, 2.5 to 1 assist to turnover ratio. So he's actually, in some ways, done pretty good. I mean, he's averages a steal a game as well. Considering sort of him playing out of position, I thought he's been good this year.
He's the job in running the team. You have to give him credit. I mean, he's not a natural point guard. So although the stats are nice, I don't feel it's his optimal position. His shooting, which I didn't go back and look at his career, but it feels like he got on track a little bit last season. And
he might have been 30 or something, but he still wasn't that good. Yeah. Better than 25 for sure.
Yeah. And so that's been an issue. But I think you're right. When Johnson got hurt, you said, well, Trey Galloway's going to have to run the team. You probably would have taken this kind of performance if you were an Indiana fan from him. So that's a good indicator that, you know, I think he's in a bad situation with that backcourt. He's been the best of the bunch. But again, the 3-point shooting has really been a limiter.
And I would say you'll never find another guy on the court who plays harder than he does. I mean, he is always, at least every time I've watched him, 100% effort. I mean, he's really impressive in that sense.
Always been a high energy guy. Yeah. And that's when you see that kind of work ethic, it's easy to understand why Tom Izzo recruited him.
Yeah.
Because Michigan State did. I remember Trey Galloway being a visitor at a Midnight Madness. So they were serious about him, but, you know, he's an Indiana kid. But part of what I was talking about, you know, even this far down the road, the pull of Indiana to in-state mm-hmm. kids is real. And that is something the program has to work with. But, nice year for him. He's a guy that it's, I think, uncertain as to whether he'll be back or not. He could take a fifth year, COVID year, I believe.
Yeah.
But they have made a call on that. Yeah,
probably have to decide what he wants to do with life in general. Next up would be Gabe Cupps, 6'1", freshman. He's been playing a little bit more also because of Xavier Johnson, who's been out. He's averaging 2.7 points a game on 38, 35, and 62 shooting. Obviously, not huge volume on those threes.
Yeah, and, you know, right now to me, I mean, Gabe Cupps was brought in as a guy, I believe he's from Ohio, and he had a tremendous high school career. And he's had to play a lot out of, he's averaging over 20 minutes a game on the season. That's probably more than they anticipated coming into the year. But they've had to out of necessity. And I haven't decided yet whether I believe that he's a guy who's going to make a breakthrough into being an impact Big Ten guarder yet. I don't think we've seen it just yet. I also don't rule out that he could develop it, as time goes on. But for now, I think the jury's out. What has surprised me is he was billed as a guy who would be a point guard because he's not big. And if he can't be a point guard, that's, you know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the Foster Lawyer situation at Michigan State. If you decide that he's not strong enough with the ball, not instinctive enough, whatever it is, that he can't run your offense, and Cupps isn't quite as small as Foster Lawyer was, but I do start to wonder then, what's his value as a Big Ten player, other than maybe as a reserve? That's an open question because he's not gifted athletically. I think he's got the potential to be a decent shooter, but he's not spectacular, at least not yet. So that would be a question going forward.
Sure. So next would be Mackenzie Mbako, a 6'7" freshman. He's obviously sought after recruit. He was initially going to Duke and left. He's averaging 12.1 points a game, 3.5 rebounds a game, shooting 41, 34, and 81.
This is a guy who was a McDonald's All-American, a top 10 recruit, seen as an impact player coming out of high school. Was long committed to Duke. And then when Duke started to see guys, particularly Kyle Filipowski, decide to return mm-hmm. for their sophomore year, Mbako decided it was time to get out. So he got released from his letter of intent and ended up at Indiana, what was, I think, a little bit of a minor surprise, but because he didn't really have a connection. He's not an in-state kid. I don't think Indiana had been hugely involved initially because he was so obviously a kid going to Duke. So that was interesting. Then you add in that they played him as a three, when I think there's been a real question mark as to whether that's a natural position for him. Now, in fairness, his shooting has gotten better as the year's gone along. You know, 34% from three, not spectacular, but it's not awful. And on this team, it actually rates as pretty good. but I'm still not convinced that he's in the right position. I think he would be better as a college four man. I think that tracks better with this game. He also has a rebounded worth of crap at all. And defensively, he's not very good. But, you know, the scoring and the shooting has gotten better as the year's gone along. So certainly not a total bust, but not the kind of, you know, super season that might have made a difference for this team,
right?
You know, as a freshman.
So then moving on to the four, Malik Renault, 6'9", sophomore, averaging 15.7 points a game, 6 rebounds a game, shooting 58, 33, and 67.
Yeah, he's a good player. You know, mm-hmm. he was part of that class last year with two top 20 guys. And I'm drawing a blank on the kid's name. He had a hyphenate last name, the guard. In any event, went to the NBA, went the first round of the draft. They came in together. Renault was not very consistent, but they didn't need him to be. They still had Trace Jackson Davis, Jalen Hood.
Shafino. Ha, there we
That's
go.
It.
Two of us, we got it.
Okay. Yeah, we got it between the two of us. He was ready to, I mean, he wasn't consistent, but he was certainly an impact guy as a freshman. Renault, not nearly as much. They had hoped that this year with Trace Jackson Davis, with Thompson gone, you know, their interior guys were gone, that Renault would step up, and he really has. I've watched him in games this year where I thought, boy, this is a really good modern four-man, good low post game, can step away from the rim and shoot a little mm-hmm. bit. He's not a high-volume three guy, averages a little over one attempt per game, but he's decent enough that he could hurt you on the right night. So, nice player, like most of their guys, has not always been consistently good defensively, but he certainly has been an impact guy as a scorer.
And so finally, rounding out the starting five is Khalil Ware, 7-foot sophomore, transferred from Oregon. He's leading the team in scoring at 15.7 points a game and in rebounds at 9.7 points a game and averages almost 2 blocks a game.
Yeah, he's tied with Renault for leading scoring honors. He's easily their top rebounder, almost a double-double guy now. And he's been on a tear lately. Had a huge game last night against Minnesota. He's been really good for the last several weeks, to the point that he's now pretty consistently showing up in mock drafts, whatever value you assign to mm-hmm. that, in the first round. But I do think I'd be surprised if he doesn't go.
Yeah.
I think this was the plan. You know, he started out at Oregon, did not have a very good year. There were some injury troubles. More than that, though, I think there were some motor problems. And even this year, there were problems with that. I saw Mike Woodson at a press conference where he basically called the kid out for not playing hard. And that's changed a little bit, although he's kind of that Xavier Booker thing in that he doesn't always look like he's gay, or pretty much he always looks like he's not
too
going
smooth.
Hard. But that's not... It's not necessarily the case. What he's got going for him is great size and length at 7'1". He's athletic and he can shoot some. Again, not a high volume 3-point shooter, but it's enough that you got to respect it. He's been really, really tough around the rim. Still kind of lacking strength. He's not one of these guys that gets his points by just backing people down. That's not his game. It's more, it kind of looks some, I don't think they're exactly the same player by any means, but it kind of looks some like what you hope for with Xavier Booker. I don't think Book is ever going to be a guy who just puts people on his hip and just, takes them to town on the blocks. I just don't think that's going to be his game. But Khalil Ware, through, lobs and, being active on the offensive boards, hitting the occasional jumper, just being available and long and athletic, can get you some production.
All right, then we'll go to the reserves. We'll begin with Anthony Leal, 6'4 senior. He's been playing a little bit more. He played more than half the game against Minnesota. He's averaging 2.4 points a game on 54, 47, and 58. Obviously, again, a low volume for those threes.
Yeah, and that's where he was supposed to be. They signed him. He was in the same class with Galloway. And Galloway was the energy, kind of jack-of-all-trades guy mm-hmm. who wasn't seen as a great shooter yet. Leal was the three-point guy, the sniper. And he's been on some teams where Indiana desperately needed three-point shooting, including this one. And he's just never been able to earn a consistent role. Lately, he has started to play a lot more. And you see those shooting numbers. If he's getting attempts, he can make a difference.
Yeah.
So I don't rule that out from happening, but yeah, it just hasn't, the whole package has not come together for him.
And then we'll come to Xavier Johnson. He has been, had an injury riddled last couple of years for Indiana. 6'3" senior guard, averaging 8 points a game at 44, 39, 69, 42 assists, but to 35 turnovers as a, I guess, backup point guard at this point, or sort of returning point guard.
Playing both spots, on and off the ball. I mentioned earlier, I'm not particularly a fan of his.
Yeah,
you've mentioned it once or twice. he's a guy when he produces numbers, they're empty numbers. He's not a player that leads to winning, in my view. I've just seen way too many games where down the stretch, he makes bad decisions, and it's just, a lot of it just seems hollow. You can have guys who are glue guys and don't do a ton in terms of the counting numbers, and yet you know they contribute to winning. Xavier Johnson's the opposite. So it's funny, Mike Woodson said the other day, I just wonder what we'd be if we'd had X all year. I'm like, well, I don't think you'd be any different. You might be worse.
Sounds sort of like Doug McDaniel, you know, where you have him or you don't have him, and your team's different, but it's different. It's bad in different ways, maybe.
So. Right, exactly. And that's a very good way of putting it. I'm just not a believer. Let's put it this way. Maybe if he's on the team, you don't get Trey Galloway, really. You don't get the benefit of that, of whatever he's developed into, you know, because he would have spent less time on the ball. Now, because Trey has done what he's done, when Xavier Johnson plays, it's not exclusively, it's not assumed that, well, he needs to be the on-ball guy. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the Indiana's benefit. But look, his shooting numbers look good. You know, the assist to turnover ratio is horrible for an on-ball guy. But, you know, it'll be interesting. I mean, the problem is, in analyzing this, Xavier Johnson is a guy who, for one game, absolutely could, you know, go off and, mm-hmm. you know, drop four threes and score 18 points and do a lot of damage. He's capable of that. I'm just not a believer.
Then we'll get to Peyton Sparks, 6'10" junior. He'll see some minutes if Walker's out with the knee injury as expected. He averages 2.2 points a game, 1.9 rebounds a game, and shoots 50% from the floor and 42.5% from the line.
Yeah, so he was an addition from, I believe, from Ball State. And then they got Anthony Walker from Miami. And Anthony Walker, they're not huge numbers, but he's been a solid third big in their rotation. And he got hurt. His knee got hurt against Minnesota. We don't have official word. It's too early to get that, but I'm not expecting him to play. If he plays, it gives Indiana another option. But mm-hmm. assuming he doesn't, it'll be Sparks. And Sparks just, you know, it's been minimal contribution, which is, again, the thing with the portal. You know, he had a good career at Ball State. There was reason to think he might be an effective player, and he just really hasn't been.
So he's the five that went and got the portal and didn't turn out to be what people thought, huh? That can happen?
Right. And yeah, exactly. Everybody doesn't hit.
So finally, CJ Gunn, 6'5", sophomore wing, averaging 3.4 points game on 32, 34, and 67 shooting. And if I recall, he was their the freshman recruit last year who was supposed to be a lights-out shooter and didn't turn out to be much of one.
Yes, he really struggled. Now, he's been better this year, but again, it's in a minimal role. But yeah, shooting was his calling card coming out of high school, for sure.
All right, so which player does Michigan State need to keep in the gutter? Brought to you by the brothers to Just Your Gutters.
I think it's Khalil Ware.
Yeah.
The way he's been playing, I think that's little doubt. Now, I think that's easier said than done. You know, again, the good news is he's not one of these back-you-down sorts that is going to consistently demand doubling or anything like that. I don't think Michigan State's going to have to really distort what they try to do defensively to deal with him. But at the same time, he's going to be tough to handle. It's going to be a real challenge for Michigan State's bigs, because he's, when he plays active basketball, his length and his athleticism and his shot-making ability all really shine through. So, yeah, he's Yeah, it was either he or Renault, and I'm going with Ware.
Yeah. All right, so then the brothers Justice Gutters will turn over to the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. If you need their windows cleaned or your house cleaned, there's no better place to go than the Squeegee Squad of Grand Rapids. They do a quick, professional job, well-priced. They are meticulous. They take care of everything. So whether it's your home, maybe your business, a high-rise, whatever it might be, they can do it all. They're so good. They actually took care of the state capitol a couple months ago. So they can do any job, small or large. And so you want to make sure you contact them if you're anywhere near the Metro Grand Rapids area. You can find all the support page, the support, you know, at the tffinots.com/support. You can find a way to reach out to them and get an estimate. 15% off if you mention Rebound. They sponsor the player that Michigan State's going to clean the glass the best. I won 17-1 last game, so I got the point, which finally put me back in the lead. It's been a long time, so I'm up 6.5-6. You get to pick first. I can only guess who you might pick for your player of Michigan State to clean the glass best.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder who it'll be. Yeah, the guy got 17 rebounds in the last game. It's Malik Hall.
Yeah, I mean, he is on an absolute tear. I feel like the only way he doesn't get those, get it, is if he's limited with foul trouble or something like that. But I feel like he is, the way he is attacking, just on both ends of the court now, it's really impressive. It's a great way to finish your senior season. And then for number two, I mean, it is a complete crapshoot. Who could possibly be? I mean, it could be absolutely anybody. And I had all day to think about this, and I didn't really think much about it. So I'm going to go with I'll go with Maddie. Maybe this is be a chance for him to come back and pick one up. So I don't have a super high faith since his minutes have really been limited. Yeah, I'll just stick with Maddie. I was thinking of changing my mind, but I guess the number two rebound of last game was Walker. So all right, so let's talk about the five keys to the game, which is brought to you by Nudge Printing. If you need Spartan apparel, there's no better place to go than Nudge Printing. They have all kinds of new things. Check out their website if you haven't been on in a little while. They've got all kinds of cool things on there now. New designs, new logos. You can go find it at nudgeprinting.com. 20% off if you mentioned Final Four at the coupon code at checkout. That's just one word. And they are the ones who sponsor our contest. And so we're very close. Once this Indiana game's done, we'll have this final standings for the Big Ten. We'll be able to figure out who wins the Big Ten Challenge. And then they will also provide the gifts for our bracket challenge. So that'll be afterwards. And I feel a lot more confident now. It's been kind of a drag doing a bracket challenge without Michigan State in it. So I feel more confident that they're going to be in it. Although one more win would be nice just to make me feel a little bit better about it. So make sure you check all that stuff out at Nudge Printing. All right. So for five keys to the game, number one, the glass. So as you mentioned before, Indiana is a bad rebounding team on both ends. And Michigan State looked really good on both ends last game. So it'd be nice if they can continue doing that. In fact, they look good for two games in a row now. But, you know.
Right. Exactly. If they can bring that gang rebounding mentality, by which we mean everybody, all five guys, are active in trying to secure rebounds. They can bring that into this game. They should have success. Indiana is very vulnerable as a rebounding team. So the opportunity is there, you know, for Michigan State. And the Purdue game was about just trying to stay close to be competitive with an outstanding rebounding opponent, and they did that. And the Northwestern, it was, we'll see if you can get an advantage against a team that's not as good on the boards. And they did that. Michigan State really carved out an edge there. So this would be another example of the latter. Indiana's even worse than Northwestern on the board. So there should be opportunities.
Yeah. And I think to your point too, the one thing we saw certainly in that game is not only did Malik Hall do, but we had a lot of rebounds with the guards. And
absolutely.
And that's, and you're, if you hold steady, I guess you hold even with in the inside with our, whoever the center happens to be plus Malik, then it's going to come down to Jaden and Tyson and Trey and AJ. And they'll, in that case, I like our chances. So that's why I think we probably should do well.
You know, it was something that came up on Jack Ebling's show today. He asked if, you know, we talked about that closing lineup that Michigan State had with Malik Hall and then the four guards.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked, you know, he thinks that might be a more viable lineup for more minutes than it's getting. Not this, not the bulk of the game by any means, but more minutes. And my response to that was, I think unless you can feel confident in your guards opting to rebound, you can't go with it in more situations than what they've done. And that's the great unknown with this team, right? There have been times where those guards have shown up, absolutely, and have been really, really effective on the glass. But we've also seen plenty of times where they haven't done that job. And it always comes down to that, in my view. You know, yesterday's a great example. You know, yeah, Malik Hall had 17 rebounds. That's great. If those guards had not been rebounding at the levels they did, you wouldn't have seen Michigan State anywhere close to the advantage that they ended up with, right?
Yeah.
It was really down to that. That's where the difference was. Because Indiana got good rebounding out of, not so much out of Hunger, but out of Martinelli and...
Barnheiser.
Yeah.
Right.
Those two guys combined, I think, had... I don't know. I think they had about as many rebounds as Malik had.
They had about, yeah. I think that between the, I think one of them, Barnes might have had 11 or 12 or something like that. So, And I do feel like a little bit that lineup was more dictated by Northwestern than it was dictated by Michigan State. And so, you know, I don't see Michigan State really going to that a whole lot. You know, except in matchup dependent. You know, I guess there's always one of those things. If you think you can get an advantage by having a big in there, then you do it. But to your point, the only thing Michigan State's really going to get at a big this year, most likely, is going to get is just rebounding, which if you're getting with the guards, then you're not really gaining a whole lot by having a, you know, Mahdi or Cooper out there, certainly, maybe even Kohler. You're not getting a lot of offense from those guys.
Right.
All right. So second key to the game is transition. Obviously, we always talk about Michigan State. They like to play fast. They're certainly much better when they're playing fast. But this is the last two games with Purdue and Northwestern, the good transition defense by those teams, and hopefully not so much with Indiana.
I think the question with Indiana is how disciplined can Indiana be? So we saw Northwestern be very disciplined last night, you know, getting back. And so consequently, there just weren't a lot of opportunities, even when Michigan State did push. Indiana will, I'd be shocked if they were that disciplined. And so there should be chances. The question is, what can you make of them? You know? And so this is one where I really want to see that mentality from jump. That, hey, we're going to push every chance we get. Because I think anytime this Michigan State team is playing in a fast game, that's to their benefit. Full court, half court, whatever. But I think if they're in transition a lot, that bleeds over into the way they play in the half court as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, especially someone like Jaden Akins really benefits more than anybody probably in the transition. He just is most comfortable shooting threes in the transition. And then once he almost gets going, then it's fine. Then he's good in the half court. It's just, he almost needs to get going in, that fast pace early. All right.
Yep. I agree.
So, number three key of the game was turn them into jump shooters. I mentioned Indiana is a bad 3-point shooting team. So, you know, of course, as you mentioned, any day you can change your fortunes by hitting a couple shots, but that's definitely probably your best bet is to keep them outside the arc.
It's just as simple as that. I think that that's easier said than done. Indiana knows it's a suspect jump shooting team. And they also know they've got two guys who can do real damage inside, three, Mbako. So they're going to look to get the ball inside as much as they can. So the key for Michigan State is be an effective team against 2-point shots. You know, force those shots as best you can to the perimeter. And let's see how Indiana can function if they're forced to live a little more with the three. You know, I think that's... I think that's the point here.
And the fourth key to the game, turnovers.
Yeah, look, Michigan State, very low turnover team. We saw it again against Northwestern, you know, against this number 7 turnover team in the country. Michigan State won the battle there.
Yeah.
So Michigan State is good at both ends. It's a rarity. They're very good at minimizing mistakes and they're very good at forcing mistakes by the other guys. That is a rare thing in the annals of Tom Izzo's tenure. Those are neither one of those things are normally strengths for Michigan State, but they are with this team. They're not strengths for Indiana. Indiana generates very little in the way of opponent turnovers, and they're not great in terms of valuing the ball either on offense, which is what you would expect out of a team that's got questionable guard situation, right?
Yep.
So there's an opportunity here, particularly if Michigan State can get some live ball turnovers going. That can help with the transition game we mentioned.
Yeah. And then certainly if you also include the glass as being an advantage, you know, on the offensive side, I mean, if you get an extra 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, possessions or shots up, I mean, that's a huge advantage to you as well. Assuming you don't shoot 20% like last game.
Absolutely. This is a game where you go into it, if you're Michigan State, I think, really believing, hey, we should get several more opportunities to score than they do.
And so the fifth and final key to the game is the threes, something Michigan State couldn't buy. I mean, Trey Hellman had 2 in the first half, and that was it. 2 for 17 last game. So, you know, this is sort of like after the James Madison game, you think, well, they can't possibly be that bad again. And yet they were for a couple of games, and then they were shooting great.
Yeah, but this has been kind of the calling card lately. You know, for most of the season, they had that terrible start, and then for a good hunk of the season, they were a very consistent 3-point shooting team.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And lately, it's been kind of feast or famine. They'll have, you know, just look at the last two games. Where'd they go? 9 for 21,
yeah.
Against Purdue, shot it very well. And they come in, go 2 for 17 against Northwestern.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things. And we've seen it, you know, if I remember correctly, I think they shot the 3 very well against Iowa, didn't shoot it well against Ohio State. I think that's how it went.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been kind of up and down. Coming off a very bad game, you'd hope that the pendulum is pointing the other direction for this one. But I think, you know, given that Indiana defends 2s reasonably well, look, Michigan State's got to look to take the ball inside. I never think otherwise. But they probably need more 3-point production in this game than we saw against Northwestern. That's for sure.
Yeah, more than 2, for sure.
Yeah, because I don't think you're going to have, you know, endless success against Indiana in the paint.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, as far as the transition goes, too, for Michigan State, a decent amount of their transition success is also 3s, right? I mean, I think that's
sure.
third of their shots from transition that are, and that's, like I said, where Aikens is most comfortable playing the wing and out there. So it'd be nice to see a little bit of them get back on track, especially getting ready to go into postseason. Speaking of which, let's talk about our listener question of the game, or the show, I should say. It's brought to you by Element Zero Sugar Electrolyte Solution. You can check that out and get an affiliate link to it at our support page, which will give you a free variety pack with any purchase, so you can buy another variety pack. It's a great way if you're working out or something like that, and you don't want to drink, you know, do a workout, burn 500 calories, and then drink 300 calories in Gatorade or something like that. So it's a good way of avoiding all that sugar and stuff. So check it out. It's great stuff. If you have a question you'd like answered to the show, send it along as a text or voice memo to me, Eric, at tffinots.com. Today's question is from Steve Schultz, who asks, assuming AJ, Tyson, Malik, and Jaden leave at the end of the year, I think that's a big assumption with Jaden, but who are the top 2024-25 MSU team leaders in scoring, rebounding, and assists?
Wow. I mean, it's really, you're talking about a sea change.
Yeah. I mean, that's like
Michigan
all
State.
The scoring.
We don't even know for sure yet what the roster looks like.
Right.
You know, I will say this, if Jaden leaves, I think it's very possible, maybe even probable, that they would look to add a starting caliber wing.
Yeah. You think so?
Mm-hmm. I would think so.
Yeah.
But if they don't, if Jaden's back, then I don't think they had a perimeter guy, and I think they're maybe only looking for one interior player in the portal, you know? And then he didn't mention Mahdi in that, but I think, you know, the assumption is Mahdi and AJ are gone, and I honestly, I think that's probably for the best for all parties.
Yep.
I will say this. The one stat that I will feel comfortable in predicting is I'm going to predict that Jeremy Fears leads the team in assists.
I think so too.
Assuming he's healthy, I mean, he's going through warm-ups now. That's an indicator that he's at least a considerable percentage of the way back. So I'm assuming that he will be healthy, and you know, if so, I think he's the obvious pick in that category. But the other two, I just wouldn't feel comfortable yet. You got to tell me who's on the team. And then we can, I mean, really.
Yeah.
And that's what people are going to have to get used to, you know? I mean, I do tend to think that Michigan State, as long as Tom Izzo is here, will have less turnover than most programs. That's what I would expect. So when I look at this, I take into account, you know, little things you hear here and there. I think there's a chance Jaden Akins will be back, although I've been assuming all along he would not be.
Yeah.
But there's certainly a chance that he's back. Beyond that, though, like, I'm not expecting any of this year's freshmen to leave. Maybe I'll be unpleasantly surprised, but you know, for people who are worried about Xavier Booker, I'm not particularly.
No, I'm not
at
either.
At this stage. And, you know, nobody else, really. So, you know, I think it's going to be a little steadier at MSU than most places. Again, at least until Izzo's done, and then we'll see. But that said, even at MSU, like I was just talking about, next year, I expect right now with the lineup I think they're going to have, they'll probably look to add at least one, maybe two guys from the portal. So that's pretty important. What are you getting?
Yeah.
Are you going to try to get guys that are going to be, you know, 30-minute a night guys for you? Or are you talking about players that are going to be, you know, in role players, support guys? And sometimes, you know, you don't know the answer to that until you get them on your campus. You might think you've got a guy who you believe can be a major contributor, and you find out, oh, maybe he's good enough to be in the back of our rotation at best. You know, you just never know the answer. So, yeah, it's just one of those things. Sorry we couldn't give a better answer to that one, but like I said, you got to tell me who's on the team first. And honestly, even then it's going to be tough because – you know, what kind of, assuming Xavier Booker is back, what kind of jump does he make as a sophomore?
Right.
Right? What does Trey Holloman do? I think Trey Holloman very easily could end up being a guy who's a consistent double-digit scorer next season.
Yeah,
I can see that. If Jaden Akins is back, does he actually take the leap next year that a lot of us thought he was going to take this year? Don't know.
Yeah.
You know, if he were to be back, he'd probably be the logical choice at this stage, with the caveat that, you know, you might add someone in the portal as a four or five man who could change that. But what we know right now, if he were back, he'd be the logical choice to be your leading scorer. Yeah. I think that's fair.
I think you had to put money down and someone that's, you'd have the best odds.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I think you could easily talk yourself into saying it could be Xavier Booker, and it certainly could be Trey Holloman.
I mean,
you know, right now it's, again, as things stand, it could be worse.
And, you know, and then, you know, from there, I've said this before. I don't know how it will play out in terms of their counting numbers, but I am confident that the 2024 class nationally was better than the 2023 class. Whether that means that Jace Richardson, Kerr Tang, Jesse McCullough are better prepared to be instant impact guys than this year's freshmen were, that remains to be seen. But I do expect Jace Richardson and Kerr Tang to both be firmly in the rotation. And, you know, how ready those guys are, you don't know until they're here. You know, both of those guys have scorers' mentalities.
Yeah.
You know, like Kerr Tang was arguably one of, if not the best jump shooter in the country last spring in AAU play, playing for an Adidas team. And Jace Richardson is just, he is a three-level scorer. I'm not going to say he's a spectacular three-point shooter just yet, but I think he's good with the potential to get better. And, man, beyond that, he's a guy who just has a knack for scoring. And I think he can help some at the point if they need him to. So both of those guys factor in. Where are they going to be? Who knows? I mean, I've seen it happen before. I've seen Sean Respert come in and lead a team in scoring as a freshman. So it's possible. I wouldn't bet on it, but I also wouldn't rule it out.
And with Michigan State, you don't really have to score 25 points a game to be the leading scorer usually. Right. You're getting 15, 16, you could be leading the team just by the way they
Absolutely.
Play.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up there. We'll see everybody after the last game against Indiana on Sunday afternoon or evening, I guess I should say. Again, just remember to check out our sponsors at the Final Four is not the schedule.com/support. There you can find links to all our sponsors if you want to get a hold of them to get any gear or want to get an estimate on your work. You can also find ways to support the show financially there. And as important, maybe more importantly, make sure you continue sharing the show with your friends and family and tell them about it. Make sure that other Spartans can find it. And the best way to do that is to just take 1 second and hit 5 stars on your review and even write a written review if you're allowed to, like an Apple Podcast. So until next time, the Final Four is not on the schedule. Go Green.